Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shudva Nripasana Gatam Venam Atyoga Shasanam Nidiyur Dasyavak Sadhyaha Sarpatrashta Ivakavaha Shrutva Nripasana Gatam Venam Atyugra Shasanam Nidiyur Dasyavak Sadhyaha Sarpatrashta Ivakavaha Shutva, after hearing, Nripa, of the king, Asana Gatam, ascended to the throne, Venum, Vena, Ati, very, Ugra, severe, Shasanam, punisher, Niliyuhu, hid themselves, Dasyavaha, all the thieves, Sadhyaha, immediately, Sarpa, from snakes, Trashta, being afraid, Iva, like, Avakaha, rats. Ooh. It was already known that Vena was very severe and cruel. Therefore, as soon as all the thieves and rogues in the state heard of his ascending to the royal throne, they became very much afraid of him. Indeed, they hid themselves here and there as rats hide themselves from snakes. Purport. Short purport. When the government is very weak, rogues and thieves flourish. Similarly, when the government is very strong, all the thieves and rogues disappear or hide themselves. Of course, Vena was not a very good king, but he was known to be cruel and severe. Thus, the state at least became freed from thieves and rogues. And text 2 has no purport. I'll read that. The great sages then called for the queen mother, Sunita, and with her permission they installed Vena on the throne as master of the world. All the ministers, however, disagreed with this. And text 3, it was already known that Vena was very severe and cruel. Therefore, as soon as all the thieves and rogues in the state heard of his ascendance to the throne, they became very much afraid of him. Indeed, they hid themselves here and there as rats hide themselves from snakes. I'm going to read text 4 also. When the king ascended to the throne, he became all-powerful with 8 kinds of opulences. Consequently, he became too proud. By virtue of his false prestige, he considered himself to be greater than anyone. Thus, he began to insult great personalities. Purport. In this verse, the word ashta vibhutibhi, meaning by 8 opulences, is very important. The king, in case you didn't know, The king is supposed to possess 8 kinds of opulences. By dint of mystic yoga practice, kings generally acquired these 8 opulences. These kings were called Rajarshis, kings who were great sages also. By practice of mystic yoga, the Rajarshis could become smaller than the smallest, greater than the greatest, and could get whatever he liked. A Rajarshi could also create a kingdom, bring everyone under his control and rule everyone. These were some of the opulences of a king. King Vena, however, was not practiced in yoga, but he became very proud of his royal position nonetheless. Because he was not very considerate, he began to misuse his power and insult great personalities. And this isn't even Kali Yuga. This is early in Satya Yuga. Several points to discuss. One is that, just continuing from yesterday, the sages were thinking of the welfare of the citizens, specifically the welfare of the citizens in terms of elevating everyone to the spiritual platform and thus being freed from the disturbances of material existence. And they needed a person who was strong through whom they could work by giving their instructions to that person, and then that person would implement what the sages said. So they picked King Anga's son. They approached the queen, and Sunita agreed, and her son was installed by the sages. Specifically, it's mentioned here that the ministers didn't agree. So when sages want to do something, it's a good idea to discuss with the ministers. Because ministers are also wise, they're more involved with governance, therefore perhaps they have their blind spots, their agendas, even their corruptions, but nonetheless they have a role to play, and from their vantage point they could see this is a bad plan, but they were, doesn't say they weren't consulted, it says they disagreed, and then the sages just overruled what the ministers had to say. The result wasn't a good result. So the point I want to show some light upon is, we often hear the importance of governing persons, or kshatriyas, receiving guidance from the brahmanas. And the kshatriya that doesn't willingly receive guidance and submissively receive guidance from the brahmanas, he's got a problem. And that problem is going to come out in the kingdom. There's the other side, and that is also that the sages have to be attentive to the indication of those who are kshatriyas. And in this case in particular, it's those who are ministers amongst the kshatriyas. Those who are offering advice need to hear from those who are receiving it. Because there may be some practical things that are necessary in order to make a wise decision about application of a principle. The application of the principle that was wisely understood by the sages is we have to have a qualified king. And here's the son of Unga. Unga's very qualified. Let's put Dana in the position. But the message likely that they were receiving is, yes, we need a king, but we don't need Dana. We're replacing a problem with a problem. Because he's not qualified. So they disagree, but they were overruled by the sages. And that had a bad consequence. Including for the sages. Including for everybody in the whole kingdom. Another detail, it's not in the Sanskrit of the verse because there's no purport, but text 2, the term, the Sanskrit term, that's used to indicate the ministers is Prakriti. The line reads Prakriti Asamatam Venum. Asamatam is they didn't approve. And Prakriti Asamatam is the ministers didn't approve. So the ministers are identified by this term Prakriti. And we know what the normal use of Prakriti is. Prakriti is energy. And energy of the energetic, Purusha. So in the case of a king, the king is Purusha, or he's the representative of Purusha and thus respected as Purusha. Because the king is the representative of the Supreme Lord. A qualified king has that service and that empowerment. He's the representative of God. There's a very nice reference to this with Haridas Thakur when he was discussing with the Qazi who in Puglia, the Qazi was instructing Haridas Thakur, give up chanting Krishna's name. Chant the name found within your own religion and follow the principles within your own religion and you'll have no problem. You're a religious man. Just be religious this way instead of that way. Because otherwise, you're going to get smacked. You're going to get some severe punishment. And Haridas Thakur said, what is the wrong? Is there something wrong if someone who is Hindu becomes Muslim? Is there something wrong there? If there's something wrong there, then similarly there should be something wrong with someone who's a Muslim becomes a Hindu. And whatever the wrong is, it's you're the king, you're the representative of God, it's your right, it's your authority, it's your duty. You punish me as you feel is fit. And I'll accept it. Because I accept the authority of God, therefore I accept the authority of king. Whatever you feel is best. But I'll tell you one thing, I won't be able to stop chanting Krishna's name. Even if your punishment is you cut my body into little bitty pieces, I won't be able to stop chanting Krishna's name. Because it's from my heart, it's from the soul. That's where the chanting is coming from. It's not a matter of birth or belief or religion. That's why I'm chanting. So in that dialogue, he's indicating the king is the representative of God. He has that authority. So even if the king is like out to lunch, in principle, one is to respect the authority. Similar example is in the Gopinath Patanayak Leela with Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya was saying the king has every right to take the taxes that belong to him. And Gopinath has no right to take the money that belongs to the king. The king, he's the representative of God. He can punish him as he feels is necessary. He's the king. Don't involve me in these worldly things. Oh, leave Puri. Don't bother me. I'm sitting here at Gambira trying to chant the holy name, and you're bringing me all these... You know, he's running around with dancing girls with the king's money, and you want me to, like, get him out of trouble. The king has the right. And he's disrespecting the king. The king has the authority. Let him exercise his authority. Sometimes, or more than sometimes, governments have concern about religion because people huddle around some religion, or even, you know, within a religion, this version, that version, and the other version, just like, you know, the Catholics and the Protestants in Ireland, or, and I don't understand all these things, that this one and that one, the group amongst the Islamic, so they're, you know, they just fight because you're on that side and I'm on this side, so we fight, and it's, you know, vicious. And on the basis of religious affiliation, it becomes, in some cases, a political tool, you know, to get what our group wants. And it has nothing to do with religion. It has to do with our group, your group. It's all on the bodily platform, not any kind of God-given principle. So government has concern. Some governments have concern. I know the Chinese government has a big concern about religion, because people get really pumped up and faithful towards a particular religion, and then if the religion leaders start to say some things, you know, against the government, oh, big problem. Big problem. So we're not pacifists. We're believe in religious principle, standing by religious principle, fight Dharma Yuddha, fighting for religious principle. But there's also this matter of respecting the qualified authority. Now it's Kali Yuga, and where is there a qualified authority anywhere in the world? But here in this example of Haridasa Thakur, he's not looking at the Kazi and thinking he's a qualified personality. But, you know, it's your authority. It's your right. Now, right, might doesn't make right the position. It carries with it certain power. Use it properly. It's your decision. So we don't, never did Srila Prabhupada indicate that we should get involved in politics and stand behind this personality or that personality and as a vote block, because then we'll get what we want. And as soon as he advised against that, not doing that, because it contaminates so many things. It contaminates our consciousness and the purpose for which the Hare Krishna movement and is existing, and that which we have faith and see as our basis and support. It's not, you know, a coalition group. It's Krishna. Krishna is the uplifter, the savior, the purifier, and the strength, our shelter. So back to Prakriti. The ministers are Prakriti, and of the king, and they're advising the brahmanas who are in another varna, this isn't a good idea. There's no elaboration, there's no purport at all on this, but to me it seems significant that the brahmanas, for whatever the reason, they, like, just overruled or looked past or paid no attention to the constituents here, the king's ministers. Is this a good plan? And they bought themselves a problem. And then next verse is the problem. King Vena. One of the purposes they wanted was achieved. The rogues and the thieves were checked. And they were checked because in the leading position we have this personality that's intense. Ugra Shasana. Ugra. It's very severe, like Ugra Karma civilization. Very severe. Pungent is another synonym that Prabhupada uses. Nasty. Or Ugra Nishringa. Look out. He's in his angry mood. Ugra. Terrible. So, Shasana is punishment. Prabhupada makes these distinction of these two terms. There's Shastra and there's Shastra. Shastra is we submit ourselves voluntarily to the instructions of wisdom and scripture. And there's an alternative, and that's Shastra, getting smashed. So then Ugra Shasana, this was Vena. He was, as soon as the person's heard, this Ugra Shasana personality has ascended to the throne, they hid themselves. A little conventional example of this. There was a period of time in New York City where it was really dangerous. I mean, really dangerous. Apparently because the administration was really weak. But there was a mayor that came in, and he was intense. He was previously part of the police force. And Devamrita Maharaj, his father, is a captain in the New York City police force. So he gave me some of the inside scoop what the mayor did. The system in New York is there's precincts, and there's a police precinct here and a police precinct there, and they oversee different geographic areas. So the system was you had to not just like catch the criminals, but reduce the numbers of incidences of crime. If you're going to be like whatever the chief person that's in charge of a police precinct, you've got 6 months to reduce the amount of crime. And they did it with computers and find out where problems went, and they went and hung out and like proactively found out where the problem was and then dealt with the problem before it became a crime. And I didn't know that till after the whole thing was over. There was a Department of Motor Vehicle near our temple, and the Department of Motor Vehicle shifted to some other place that was vacant, and a police precinct moved in, and it was because our temple was in a high crime area. I didn't know till this was all over. And then the police that were normally like, you know, la-di-da, they started coming around and, you know, coming to the door of the temple and saying hello and, you know, being proactive instead of like, you know, getting the report and going and trying to capture the criminal after the crime happened. They were checking out the scene. And after some time, the whole precinct moved to some other place where the purpose was to reduce crime. Like, you know, get the strong police force in place where there's tendency for crime to occur and reduce it. Like, you know, have the rats crime to just run away when the snake comes. Or maybe an example in our temple is we get a cat to get rid of the mice. Something like that. Except the cat's not so good at it. But it's supposed to happen like that anyways. So when the cat's away, the mice will play. So get a cat, mice won't play. So it's like, that's the theory. It depends like on the cat, I guess. It may depend on the mice, too. Somebody sent me a series of pictures. I'm way off topic, but there's a cat with her paw up in the air like this, poised, and her ears like this, and there's a mouse right in front of her. And he's like, fear is in his eyes, but he has his hands up like this and his teeth open, and they're like staring at each other. Or, here's another one. This didn't happen this time, but previous time when visiting in Jagannath Puri, it was really hot, really hot. And so in the afternoon, we had the afternoon off, had the fan on and left the door open just to like air circulation, like whew. So it was very near the veranda, and I was sitting at my desk doing stuff, and I looked around, and there was a monkey in the door. And he wasn't a small guy. He was like, wasn't as big as Prahlad, but he was big. So I stood up, like, you know, you stand up and the monkey's supposed to run, right? He didn't run. He looked at me and went, showed his teeth and, you know, okay, now what to do here? And he started looking around the room because he was, you know, he was like a street thug. He wasn't going to like be intimidated. He came for a reason, and he was looking for something to steal. Food or a camera or, you know, whatever he could get his hands on, and, you know, whatever his thing was. So I picked up the chair. And he raised his arms, like, you know, let's have a fight. What do you do at that point? So what I did was I screamed at the top of my lungs. I lost my voice afterwards because I screamed so loud. And then I started running towards him with the chair in my hand. And he was looking at me, looking at the chair, you know, ready, whether should I fight or, you know, and then he finally just backed off and jumped over the ledge. And slammed the door, and the other people that were in the hall wondered, what happened? Maharaj, is everything all right? You know, what happened? When there are thugs and rogues and thieves and, you know, strength needs to be applied. So they got the right guy for that one. They got rid of the rogues and the thieves. At least they went in hiding. But the next verse, text 4, when the king, Vena, got on the throne, he didn't have the qualifications to be the king. So he didn't rule by spiritual strength. He ruled by intimidation. Not just the rogues and the thieves. He ruled everybody by intimidation. Because he was too proud. Specifically, that's mentioned. Unadha, very proud. I'm the king. And when scripture tells us, life tells us also, but very specifically scripture tells us, when there's pride, one can do any hurtful thing to another party. One becomes cruel because of pride. Because what does it matter? In anybody else's existence is expendable. And their feelings, who cares? Because what's important is me and what I want, and, you know, look out, here I come, and I'm proud. So such a person can easily become very cruel. And we mentioned this before with relation to when Dana was young, he'd take his bow and arrows and he would go kill innocent deer in the forest. Just cruel, cruelly taking, causing pain for others is not a problem for one who is proud. No problem at all. You got a pain? Tough luck. They don't care. And then the next thing that's mentioned is he began insulting great personalities. And you know, like, who cares? But, you know, that brought a few problems his way because the great personalities did him in. You know, there's a reaction for, it's one thing to kill deer and chase rogues and thieves. It's another thing to insult great personalities. For whatever the reason, even by mistake, what to speak of deliberately out of pride. And such persons bring about their own demise. It's like the classic good against evil in dramas or novels or life. There's this perennial good against evil. Some persons depict that Mahabharata is such a book, good against evil. And there's so many books, so many good against evil plots. What's the latest one with the kids? You know, there's so many volumes of the good against evil plot. Harry Potter. Good against evil plot. The forces of good and the forces of evil. And it's not just, you know, in the novels that it wins, the good wins, because like, yay, good wins. But it's the modes of nature. Because ultimately, the personality of Godhead is supporting those who are Pritranaya Sadhunam, Vinashaya Chaduskritam. And who's the more powerful controller than the Supreme? For some time, the forces of evil or evil persons may prevail, but they always get bumped off. They're not just in novels and dramas and in storybooks. It's the modes of nature. It's the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the controller. So, misuse of power be due to pride, and great personalities, they're also expendable. What's the big deal? Insult them too. That is the beginning of the spiral down of such powerful personalities. Always. As Prabhupada would quote the saying, some British saying, pride goeth before the fall. So, what's the lesson? Don't become proud. And understand ultimately the place of protection and shelter is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So just go there. Go to the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not that we have to be intimidated by evil people that are in the world. So there's evil people in the world. That's not new. This is Satya Yuga, and there's an evil king. Those evil people in the world are ultimately dealt with by the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his various agents. In this case, the very same persons, the sages who put Vena in his post, they removed him from his post. They were very powerful. Although he was very powerful, they were very powerful. And ultimately, where does the power for either the evil or the good come from? It comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the message. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Yes.
I have two questions. One is actually the first one. I'm a very basic But some elaboration, I would appreciate some further enlightenment.
Interesting preamble. Go ahead.
How would we define pride, and what is it about the nature of pride that makes a person cruel?
The nature of pride, those are the two questions, or that's... A very simple definition is looking at pride in terms of misconception of self. If I have a conception of self as ego, and that is who I am, and then what's in the category of what is mine, there's I and there's mine. So false ego is having a wrong conception of self, and having a wrong conception of what is mine is pride. The spiritual conception is nirmama. Nothing is mine. It does belong, whatever there is belongs to somebody. It doesn't belong to me. Here's some proof. Whatever I might say, this is mine, like that, it can be taken from me. It belongs to somebody else. It's not mine. But pride says it's mine. It's a misconception of those things in relation to the misconception of self that are mine. That's pride. It may be more gentle, it may be more gross, but that's what pride is. You can have a gentle, proud person too, along with a mean, proud person. Proud. Supposing somebody's really good at piano. You know, they practice and practice and practice and practice, and they're really good at piano. And then they can become proud. They're not understanding where does that ability come from. They can be like, you know, Liberace or whatever, some big pianist, and proud. You know, subtle, not like going around bashing people proud, but proud. And what makes one potentially cruel is I'm at the center. Like, you know, what the universe revolves around me. Like, what makes me happy? What makes me unhappy? My happiness is it. That's it. Because I have this misconception of who I am and what's mine. And if there's something that interferes with my happiness, I have no problem getting rid of that something that interferes with my happiness. It's expendable, because what's important is my happiness. That's my universe. I may, by convenience, choose to agree to certain, you know, I won't cross this line. But it's just for convenience. That's all. Because if I can get away with it, I'll cross that line. Convention, that's all. That's what, you know, ethics and morality is, there's nothing absolute about it. It's just convenient. You know, we agree to follow by these because it makes my sense enjoyment, you know, more peaceful. But it's all about me. And so, cruel can easily happen. Who cares? Yes. Yeah.
Coincidentally, you're saying about things happening in New York. They just arrested 120 people yesterday in the mafia in different boroughs and stuff, so
yeah.
Goes around, comes around.
Yeah. Not just in the boroughs, in New Jersey and all around town.
Yeah.
Big deal. Big, like a big, since Al Capone, one of the biggest hits.
Yeah.
The mafia. Anyone else? Okay. Oh, I thought that's what your two questions. Okay. Okay.
The second question is, when a person who is not qualified is placed in a qualified position because of the force of circumstances.
Okay.
And certain opulences are accrued because of being placed in such a position. How does one protect oneself from getting proud? Because many times, I recognize that sometimes it overtakes imperceptibly in very subtle ways.
It overtakes?
Pride overtakes the heart imperceptibly, and then by the time you realize it is, you know, you're already captured.
Well, the best is to be submissive to someone who one sees as one's superior. And when one gets indication from one's superior, then immediately that what you described, becoming overwhelmed with the circumstance, is immediately taken care of. A very nice example of that is Dhruva, when he's fighting with the Yakshas. And Soma comes. Excuse me. The Prajetas, when they were burning all the forest, and Soma comes. He just gave some indication, immediately stopped. And Dhruva was with the sages. He was like very afraid. But the sages said, hey, Dhruva, remember Lord Vishnu said, you know, you would be rule for 60,000 years. And it's not 60,000 years yet, so you're going to be all right. And, you know, you're very dear to him. Just like do your service to Lord Vishnu. Remember Lord Vishnu. But he got carried away too, and just some indication. And he saw Mahamana, and he's... seeing a personality, at least one, or, you know, the position of others who are my superior, and when they give some indication, immediately it checks that tendency. That just by being a conditioned soul in the material world, it can come, even for a very elevated person. The Prajetas, they had seen Lord Vishnu. Dhruva had seen Lord Vishnu, a special favor from Lord, but, you know, still it happened. So we're not invulnerable to pride. Supersoul can prompt us, but others can also. And dismissed. Just by that association. It's value of elevated association and being submissive to that elevated association. Yes? How'd it go?
We were discussing last night, Jagannath Prabhu and I, this principle that's discussed in the 5th chapter and also in the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that the lower nature of the body and all that may remain while the consciousness is absorbed elsewhere, and therefore one doesn't get involved in trying to enjoy or experiencing the suffering of the lower nature. So, and specifically the point is there, I don't remember which verse it is of the 5th chapter, but it discusses even to the end of life one may be tolerating the urges of anger and desire or something like that, but he remains happy because he's not succumbing to those things. So we're kind of discussing that point. And then just now this point came up that even a very elevated personality, such as we see Dhruva Maharaj, for example, or you said the Prachetas, they even got caught up in that, but because they had remained properly cultured, I guess you can say, or they had that connection, then they were protected. So I just wanted some more insight into what the really elevated personality, I mean, what's the goal in that sense? It's because a lot of times we get caught up with the idea of somehow I'm going to perfect my existence in a material sort of way, but really it seems like the connection is the most important thing, and then the rest is...
Well, consciousness, it's Krishna consciousness is the important thing. And Krishna consciousness comes through association and through the process of hearing. It gets restored. It's already there, it just gets restored. So that's what's wanted. That's the objective, restoring our Krishna consciousness. When Krishna consciousness awakens, the disturbances coming from the outside may still be coming. The waves of Maya are still playing themselves out. But if one is situated elsewhere in terms of consciousness, it doesn't disturb. Like that verse Prabhupada so many times would quote Jamunacharya's verse about, now that I have been able to experience the happiness of my loving relationship with Krishna, when worldly thoughts of the pleasures of sex life enter the mind, automatically my lips curl and spit on the thought. So, higher consciousness is protection from lower nature and the conditionings and urges of the body and mind. And the means of getting that Krishna consciousness awakened is this descending process through hearing, and hearing from proper sources and taking shelter there. Then there's strength and happiness. That's in contrast to the other thing that may look attractive. It's appalling. Not just like restraining oneself, but it's appalling. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.